We are back. Good day, everyone. Hopefully, you didn't miss me too much, as much as David and I missed you guys. And of course, we're missing Julian, our young and trustworthy engineer.
Yeah,
he's having a good time down in Corpus Christi, enjoying it with his family down there. So, Julian, enjoy and have a good time.
I thought he went on strike or something.
Yeah. Oh, why?
Well, Joe knows.
Joe knows?
Yeah.
I guess we will pay him more.
That's right. This is why we need you, Julian, at the engineer desk.
Yeah, exactly. As you can see, I flubbed that dub, didn't I? Gee, yeah. Oh, my goodness. Okay. Anyway.
So this is our Julian Appreciation Show.
Yes, it is. Yes. And once again, everyone, welcome to the Fresh Black Coffee Show for this last day of July 2021, July 31st, 2021. And David, as I'm apt to do, as we are apt to do, Babylon Bee strikes again. Keep us right up to date. Keep us chuckling. And I hope this is good for you guys, too. This week's news, Simone Biles has been awarded a non-participation trophy at the 2020 Olympic Games. In Tokyo, members of the International Olympic Committee voted Thursday to award Simone Biles the first ever Olympic non-participation trophy for her decision to pull out of this week's gymnastics competition. Spokesman said, "It takes a great deal of courage and dedication to participate in the Olympics. But it takes even more courage and more dedication not to participate. Thus, we have decided to give Ms. Biles the prestigious award for non-participation in our sport." Mm-hmm. CNN's Don Lemon, he called Biles' decision not to compete stunning and brave.
Oh, of course.
Ms. Biles is truly an American hero for stepping down to focus on her mental health, he noted. "I've endured similar emotional struggle myself, but I have not been in a position to step down because of my important role as the 1,864th most important trusted news source in America."
What's that number again?
1,864th.
Okay.
Most trusted news anchor in America. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said there is no greater honor for an athlete than to not represent their country in the Olympics. No greater honor. "Quitting is the bravest thing anyone can possibly do. And we should all strive to follow Ms. Biles' example," she said. She then quickly added, "I mean, for athletes. That statement does not apply to aging politicians who may or may not have advanced cognitive decline."
There you go.
It does not. I wonder who that would be. Oh, despite praise from most sources, Biles' award did attract some scrutiny as well. Former NFL star Colin Kaepernick blamed Biles for ripping him off.
Simone
is no big deal, Kaepernick told reporters. "I was refusing to participate in sports long before it was cool. I won a trophy, too." Oh, man. I tell you what, those guys, can you imagine? I would love to be on that staff where all we do is sit around all day and think of funny stuff to make fun. And there's a lot of it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of it. Sometimes when I watch these commercials, mm-hmm. I don't know if you know, but these ad companies, they have a bunch of people sit around the room, mm-hmm. and then they just throw it out there, and then they put it all together. And
one of my older brothers was a toy engineer for Kenner Toys, and he said his job was out of the Cincinnati office headquarters of Kenner Toys. They had a room of just dreamers. And when they finally figured out they had a great idea for a toy, they would call my brother in, the engineer, and they'd describe it to him, and he'd try to draw it up. And many times he'd say, "It's not even possible to engineer that toy, much less sell it for under $1,000.
So, by the way, I don't know if you knew, but every time you hit the table, it goes through.
I'm sorry.
So if you're hearing like a drum beat or something, it's not our hearts. Well, it's not our hearts beating. It's just Dave pounding on the table. He's passionate about toy engineering, apparently, you know.
My friend Gary Richardson, the attorney, he said, you know, if the facts aren't in your favor, pound the law. If the law's not in your favor, pound the facts. If neither of them are, then pound the table. So maybe when I'm pounding the table, it means I'm saying a bunch of garbage. I don't know. God.
Speaking of Gary.
Yeah.
Yeah. That did you support him for governor?
I did. Yeah. I did. Yeah.
He had – well, I'll tell you what Gary's problem was. Mm-hmm. One-trick pony.
Yeah, yeah.
His one trick was to get rid of the turnpike.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Authority and yeah. the fees associated, which I think most of us supported.
Yeah.
The only problem is there were a few other issues that yeah. people thought were at least as important, if not more important.
Well, some of us go back to 2002 when he played the spoiler and Largent
right.
would have yeah. won, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah. And so you think some people still held that against him?
I think so.
All those years later?
I spent an hour with him out in the parking lot after he spoke to the Republican Men's Club here in Tulsa. And I just grilled him about that. And by the time we were done, I said, you know, Gary, I may support you. And then when the legislature did that unconstitutional tax on tobacco, calling it a smoking cessation fee. I said, Gary, you want to get back in the state game? Here's your opportunity. And he did. And he helped fight several of those taxes. And we got some of them thrown out by the Supreme Court.
That's good.
So, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know. I'm going to say this. We love you, Gary.
Of course
but we do. One of Gary's problems, he has the persona of a shyster attorney. Mm. When you know, look at and listen to him, either that or a slick evangelist, which basically is his background. I don't know if you know, he comes out of a whole line of long line
very
of preachers.
Devout Christian man,
yeah, and great guy. I mean, wonderful guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think sometimes we say we shouldn't judge a book by the cover, but we do.
Yeah.
I mean, just it's yeah. like I always say, usually the handsomest person of the people running
yeah.
will win.
Yeah.
Of course, that didn't happen in this last yeah. presidential election.
Yeah.
But not that either one of them are that handsome, but let's just say if there had been a young guy running, he yeah. probably would have won.
Yeah.
No, but I do believe that a lot of Gary's persona had some effect. I remember I did the first, I mean, it was so funny. I used to just laugh. I did go to his office and we sat down and talked for a long time. But I really like the guy. Let me say that. I really like he's a wonderful man.
He's truly.
Sometimes he really is honest. He's what you see. You know, he's a no guile person.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I remember I did the first ever debate for the gubernatorial election back in 2000 and what was it, 18, I guess, early on. It was the Wagner County Republican club did this. And not the club, it was the Republican
Party.
The party, yeah. And were you at that?
No, I heard about it.
But and so Gary, Governor Stitt, who eventually won, and Gary Jones was there, and there was one other person, I can't remember.
Well, I don't know if Dan Fisher showed up.
No, he didn't show up.
And Todd Lamb.
Nope, he didn't show up. So I think I'm pretty
Mick
sure.
Mick Cornett, probably Mick wouldn't
maybe
show
there
up.
Were only three.
Yeah.
It was three or four. In any event. But I remember, I don't even remember what the question was, and they asked Gary what his thoughts were, and he went on this long pontificating. It was a yes and no question.
Mm-hmm.
So Gary goes on this long deal.
Use up your minute, man.
Yeah, and so after it was over, he says, thank you. And I said, excuse me, Gary, but we still didn't get a yes or a no. And so he stands up, he says, oh, yes. And it's just like that. So he had just spoken for 5 minutes, and it was a yes and no answer.
Yeah.
And then I remember the now governor Stitt. This was his first opportunity. And the question was, what do you think about school funding and the state legislature and all this? And he said that he felt one of the problems that we didn't give enough authority to the legislature over school funding. I think they have only a 25 or 30% say in this, and the rest is somewhere. I don't even know how it works. But he says what we need to do is give them a greater authority. And so I'm supposed to be moderator. I just can't do that. I can't just stand quietly. So I said, excuse me, Mr. Stitt, but why, if they've screwed up their 25%, would we give them all of it? And the crowd just started, the crowd started just going crazy, applauding and cheering. And afterwards, I had to go to him. I said, listen, I apologize for doing that to you, but, you know, I figured you better
get this
out
that.
Of your system right in the beginning. Don't ever do that again.
Yeah,
you know,
he walked into it.
Oh, he walked into it. And I'm telling me, I said, that was easy if later on they can just really nail you with, or the media, particularly in the press. After, he said he wants to give more to the legislature and take it away, blah, blah, blah. You know how they do.
Yeah.
So anyway, but I could tell I had to ask his forgiveness. I said, I am your friend, but I'm not going to let anybody get away with that if I can see that you're killing yourself here.
Yeah, I do want to say one more thing about Gary. As at his house talking, actually to his wife, and I'm going to say Gary, like me, married up. I mean, charming lady Lynn is, and just really sweet lady. But we were talking about, what was good, what didn't work. And, and he said, there were some people stepped up, wanted to do this, and Gary did it with them, and it really wasn't good. But Gary could never say no to a friend. He's incredibly loyal. And here's his sweet wife, I mean, Southern Belle, and she says, I'm the cutthroat one. Gary, when you're his friend, and I'm going to tell you this is true, incredibly loyal man. So I just going to put one more plug.
Yeah, no. I mean, you don't have to convince me. Yeah. There are a few people I've met in my life, which at first take seems like, ooh, what's the deal with this? Yeah. You don't trust them as far as you could throw them.
Right.
I mean, just there's something about them. Mm-hmm. But then as you get to know them, wow, they're for real.
Yeah.
This is not a phony. This is not fake. This is who they are. One of my best friends was like that. First time I met him, a black preacher, we were at Melody. You remember Melody Land Christian Center?
Yeah, Wilkinson.
Ralph
Wilkinson.
First big, mega church, charismatic mega church.
Across from Disneyland.
Right, exactly. And so while I was in seminary, I attended there, and one of their worship leaders named Don Thomas, I met him one night at some apartments, and he walks in and he starts going, and I said, who is this jive Negro? I mean, this was my black guy.
Yeah.
And it ended up, he's godfather of our firstborn.
Oh, yeah.
His, I mean, seriously, we became very, very, very close. And he's gone through some issues, but he's doing well in Atlanta now. But he's one of those people where at first, I just, there's something about this guy that doesn't seem right. But it was him. He was very legit, very honest, most honest person you'll ever meet. And it's just their personality.
Yeah. Once you get past that first impressions, and I'd much rather be that person, that as you get to know them, you begin to appreciate more than be the opposite.
Exactly.
Because there's some people that you just think, wow.
Right.
And after a few weeks, you're like, my God, I got to get away from this.
Yeah. Did they have me fooled?
Yeah.
Can you imagine marrying into that?
Yeah. <That's enough. laughs> Which is an argument against quickie marriages.
Yeah. It's funny you say that, because just yesterday, a good friend on Facebook was talking about how if people have dated for 3 to 6 months and are not afraid to commit and get married, there's something wrong. And I said, what? It used to be, if you're the Jewish tradition or the older, from the time you're 10 years old, imagine that one, getting ready for till you're 18 or 20 to get ready. And my wife's cousin and her husband, they started dating and they got engaged when they were juniors in high school. The parents allowed them to get engaged.
Yeah.
But they weren't able to get married until they were like 19 years old. So they waited. I think their engagement was like 2.5. I mean, and not just dating, they were engaged for 2 years. And I'm thinking, how in the world do you do that? You know, that would be rough, but they did it and they've been happily married now for 45 years.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Oh yeah.
Which brings me to you have a story you want to, it's been in the news this week about This is a strange one. And this one, I'm waiting to hear your take because I have a mixed feeling about this too. Yeah. But go ahead.
Well, the problem I have, and you'll find on our website now, freshblack.coffee is where you'll find Eddie Huff's.
Not at freshblackcoffee.podbean.com.
Well,
this
it's
is
there
freshblack.coffee,
too.
And yes. That's it.
That's where we'll have more of the show notes and stuff, including a link to this story, which is out of KTUL Channel 8 here in Tulsa. And they said that the mother of a 12-year-old girl just got arrested when the girl went to the hospital to deliver her baby. And as it goes, there's no charge of violent rape involved here, but the girl said that the father of this baby is a 24-year-old man. And what incensed Channel 8 was the mother even threw a baby shower for the baby.
And basically she was arrested for that, by the way. I just heard that on the news on KRMG yesterday evening that they did arrest the mother for throwing the shower.
They did arrest her, but they're basically tying in that social outrage, community outrage, because she threw a baby shower for the baby. Now, what are we supposed to do? Let's give a little bit of background here. The father is 24 years old. Since that relationship, you know, around the time of conception, that the father has since been arrested and prosecuted and is serving time, actually for a sex crime, for a violent rape. But the point being here.
So, but wait, let me ask. Okay, let me go back. Was it a violent rape?
It was not a statutory rape.
Okay.
And so the only other one would be a violent.
Okay, so apparently, okay, I just want to get this straight. So the parents really were not involved in setting these two up and setting up the occasion for the impregnation of their daughter.
That's the thing you don't know.
See, that's what I'm trying to, because that adds a lot to the story if we knew.
Right. I mean, we don't know. And I have a problem with prosecutors, with cops, and with even state agencies like DHS for selectively spinning a narrative upon arrest to really, you know, get the jury pool all of an attitude in an outrage on a particular narrative. They did not cite any evidence that the mother even knew they were dating or that she somehow accommodated sexual relations or encouraged it. They provided no information on that. The only information they gave is that she threw a baby shower. Now, let me say this. Planned Parenthood will tell us all the time, we got to teach sex education, you know, to these little kids, because they're going to do it anyway, you know. Okay, so the mother, if she did not know that there was sexual activity, did not condone it, as though any parent today can absolutely, without being abused or accused of locking a child up and having, you know, facing charges for locking them up in the room, you know, what are you supposed to do as a parent? But let me get to post-conception. Now, all of a sudden, the baby is going to be born because both the mother, the family, all of them do not want an abortion. And of course, they're going to make that baby feel, because it's not the baby's fault. We've got to say we support this new life regardless of how this life came into be. And yet Channel 8 is outraged that they threw a baby shower. It's, to me, the implication is you're supposed to quietly get rid of the baby, you know. And so now they've arrested the mother, grandmother of the newborn baby, the mother of the 12-year-old girl. Haven't said anything about the father. Where's the father in this? Why is the mother? Oh, okay, so maybe she has sole custody and she's not married. But this is my problem, number one, with law enforcement in their rush to spit out a narrative of how they want to do it. They're literally making their case in the court of public opinion before a person's even lawyered up. I have a problem with that. And I see that happen, especially to poor people. Oftentimes you hear it as a narrative of against minorities, but I'm saying prosecutors have a history of picking on poor people because they can't lawyer up like the rich folk can. Jerry Lee Lewis, if you remember back in the 50s, very popular singer, top of the charts, was married to what, a 12 or 13 year old. And they were outraged. They also were outraged because they were cousins, which is allowed in many states, and there's no biblical prohibition.
But they were from Arkansas, weren't they?
Louisiana.
Louisiana, okay.
Jimmy Swaggart's cousin, by the way.
Oh, yeah, that's
Jerry
true.
Lee Lewis.
That's true, yeah.
But anyway, so this is my problem here, is the fact is in some states, you can get married at 12 years old in the United States. Now, that's if the parents consent and the girl's pregnant.
You know, I have to throw this in. This is an interesting thing. We had some dear friends. The wife, she's since passed away. She had cancer and passed away, unfortunately. But her husband, we used to tease him because his wife was 12 years younger than him, which is the same period of time.
Sure.
As we're looking at 24 and 12. Yeah. This was, you know. And so he used to joke that when he was after school, his guys would friends would say, "Hey, come, let's go do this." He said, "No, I'm sorry, I got to go down and check out my wife at the kindergarten." He was a senior, hey, but he can't go out because he's got to go check on his wife down at the kindergarten. But we used to tease him about that. But it is so funny, the different mores. Mm-hmm. This comes under the area of mores, which have become laws.
Yes.
So in certain countries, Middle Eastern countries, Islamic countries, it's, I mean, not abnormal for even a 50-year-old guy to be betrothed to or marry a 10 or 12-year-old girl, which is outrageous to our thinking.
Yeah.
And I think it probably should be. I mean, I'm not trying to justify it. I feel sorry for the poor girls, you know, especially. But here in America, it's not only that it's not condoned or sanctioned, but it's actually very much illegal.
Yeah.
And so it's funny how that works depending on the part of the world you live in.
Yeah.
But getting back to your point, and we should be outraged, I have to take a little different approach than you on this. Mm. A baby shower is that's a little much.
Oh.
In other words, there used to be a time when that would be a thing of shame. It used to be something you wouldn't advertise, you wouldn't promote, you wouldn't let everybody know. In fact, someone close to me, not in my immediate family, but extended family, got pregnant at the age of 18.
Mm-hmm.
And they shipped her off to have the baby.
Yeah.
So nobody knew for 30 years that she actually had a child until the day she felt she needed to go find that child. So it used to be a thing where you didn't broadcast it. And that's the difference today. In fact, there are certain schools, we've gotten to the point where girls make these pregnancy pacts. I'm going to get pregnant. And these are like high school girls, maybe even middle school girls, where they make these pacts. I'm going to get pregnant. Yeah. I'm going to get pregnant. You know, that kind of thing. It's like a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's become so acceptable that a mother actually feels she can throw a baby shower. To me, that's a little much.
Right.
I would, you know, okay, we're going to keep the baby, but let's keep this within the family. Let's keep it intimate in the family. We're going to do everything to raise this child and give it a proper home and upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to, because a shower to me is, it denotes celebration. Celebration. Mm-hmm. So, that's just my take on this.
And that is.
I'm happy that they wanted to keep the life and wanted to, we're happy to celebrate life in that sense, but shower is a little much for me.
Right. And you got to separate logically, you know, you get impacted, you outraged, and we have a moral outrage to certain things, and that's fine. That has its place. I'll take the example of when my kids were in youth group. There were a couple of older girls in the youth group, still in high school. Both of them were daughters of church leaders, and they both got pregnant. We only found out about one, the one who carried the baby to term and had the baby adopted. The other one got an abortion. Very few people found out about it. And that girl never faced any public shame because she quietly killed her baby, the one who carried the baby to term and made sure that the baby had a loving family to grow up in. She faced public shame. You tell me, who does God honor more?
Well, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it doesn't, what would I say, it doesn't negate or tone down the fact that I think the mother stepped a little over bounds. I don't think she should go to jail. I mean, I don't think that, that's a little silly to me that we're going to lock her up because she threw a baby shower. In fact, it's forget Channel 8, forget the law in the law enforcement people, that they're going to punish a mother because she allowed her daughter to have a baby. I mean, what was she supposed to do?
Exactly.
I mean, unless the mother set it up and got paid for having.
And we don't know that yet.
Right, we don't know.
And so here's my thing. That baby needs to be not called a bastard all their life or put down because of their heritage. Nobody should be put down because of who their parents are.
Which I will interject. I was 5 years old before my parents got married.
Okay, there you go.
And so it's funny. I have never considered myself a bastard, illegitimate. Mm-hmm. I've always considered myself special.
There you go.
So that's So I can testify to that there is a way to raise a child.
Yeah.
And not have them feel a stigma of illegitimacy, as we would call it. So, but at the same time, without celebrating the fact. You know, in my case, there were mitigating circumstances that led to this, caused all of this and all. But I think we've gone the other way now. In fact, we're a lot longer on this subject than I thought we would be. One of my pet peeves. Let me throw mine, which relates to this. Mm-hmm. It deals with the church. Mm-hmm. My daughter and I have gotten in arguments about this. I was at a church in Nashville, well-known Christian, you know, a lot of
big church.
Music artists came out of that church. And so I'm there and I'm with these friends. I'm staying with these friends who are next door neighbors in Europe. Mm-hmm. And the one daughter was 15. The other one, I think, was 12, 15 or 16. The other one was 12 or 13. And so I'm sitting there and they had a baby dedication. There were three young ladies dedicating their babies. Not one father among them. Mm-hmm. And they were having this public, let's just love these mothers and these children, et cetera, et cetera. And you had grandparents there, the mothers and these babies, these special babies. Mm-hmm. and I remember thinking, this isn't right.
Yeah.
This is not right. Because I looked over at this 16-year-old and this 12-year-old, 15 and 12, whatever, thinking, what kind of message does it send to these two and every other young single girl, that, I can go out here and have sex, I can get pregnant, and it won't matter.
That's a very important point.
So you know, and then, of course, you know, my loving daughter, which I do appreciate, she has that just heart of total compassion and everything.
Yeah.
But in her mind, well, what are we supposed to do, lock them up? Exactly. You know, the opposite. And I said, no, do like the Catholics do, right? What do the Catholics do? They have a baby dedication. They have a baptism where you go to the church, you meet with the pastor or the father, the father and the priest.
Right.
Oh, yeah. And then the family members. And you go in and you choose godparents and the whole deal and they get sprinkled. And basically that happened to me. That's how I was baptized.
That's true.
So it's not that we're calling them anathema or cursed.
Right.
You know, we're saying, God, take this child. Mm-hmm. Protect it, bless it, whatever. But we're not going to make a public thing. We're almost honoring this type of birth. So this is there's a distinction, and we've gotten to the point now that if we don't honor something publicly, all of a sudden it's not enough.
Now, you make a good point. I think the Catholics do have it right by not trying to incorporate it in their mass, in their public celebration, their community celebration. They make it a family celebration thing. The other point I wanted to bring out is if that same junior high kid goes and murders a few people, prosecutor, first thing they do is get them to, you know, face charges as an adult, right? You know, we're going to try, you know, that. They don't always get there. 14, they often do. So a 12-year-old is seen as a criminal for some crimes, but now on fornicating, they're seen as a victim because it's statutory rape. They're not old enough to give consent. She's still a fornicator at 12.
We're going to get some calls this week. I have them in. We're going to get some emails.
You know, I'm sorry, Eddie. At 12, I knew right and wrong. I believe you did too.
Well, sure. Yeah, nowadays, you might as well say 7 and 8.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's little, what they call them, little shorties or little, there's this commercial where, you know, they have these little killers at 10, 9, 10-year-old.
Yeah.
That don't have a problem with shooting people. So, yeah. No, I do get you. I do understand what you're saying. And I commend you for being brave enough to say this publicly. I hope you don't get stoned as you leave. No, but these are real issues that for some reason, and again, I think this adds to it, that we, particularly Christians in the church, mm-hmm. are afraid to discuss.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, this is reality.
Oh,
this is reality. You know, yeah. I was at a meeting up at Oklahoma Wesleyan University,
mm-hmm.
and Josh McDowell was speaking.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Great apologist.
Awesome
I mean, his
guy.
His
yeah.
book is like the Bible
on
apologetics and all.
Yeah.
But his real issue at that time was pornography.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that 9.999 out of 10 kids mm-hmm. have already seen pornography mm-hmm. by the age of 7.
Wow.
Not 17,
mm-hmm.
not 12,
mm-hmm.
not 10, 7.
Yeah.
And everybody was just aghast. Oh, you know. And they said it's almost impossible mm-hmm. to keep them from it.
Yeah.
And I learned this firsthand with my son. We were in Germany, and he was at a friend's house,
mm-hmm.
and the friend had no parents at home, latchkey mm-hmm. kid. He's over visiting a friend. And we find out through his sister who told us that he had been watching some movie at mm-hmm. this friend's house or something.
Yeah.
So it's a different day. I don't think it changes anything with regard mm-hmm. to the law or anything. I mean, the law is the law, and we have the law for a reason.
Yeah.
There's a reason we have that. I think the way this was handled was just poorly handled by all sides.
I mean,
every side.
Oh, yeah.
Every side.
Yeah, there's no champion, no hero in it, in
no,
any of this.
No, I remember, you remember the case at Victory.
Yeah.
With the janitor and the young lady and the grandmother who was raising the mm-hmm. young lady
mm-hmm.
begged the church to keep it quiet,
mm-hmm.
to avoid shame and a stigma on the mm-hmm. young lady and all of this. But, and so the church decided, okay, for your sake, we will keep it within ourselves.
Mm.
Then the mother finds out, gets upset. The mother who had nothing to do with it, wasn't raising the daughter. She was, and somehow she found out. I personally think it had something to do with ka-ching, ka-ching.
Mm.
You know, oh, I can make some money on this because they shouldn't have done this.
Yeah.
And you had one of the leaders, the pastors there.
Mm-hmm.
Or several of them actually mm-hmm. on staff almost go to jail over this thing because they were trying to look out. They weren't trying to hide it from the church. I mean, say what's the benefit of hiding this from the church? It happens. But I think it was a case. And I know that I used to, my kids went to the house and played with, you know,
mm-hmm.
one of the children of the pastor and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the kid, his heart, well, he's a man now, but I know there was never, ever any ill intent
mm-hmm.
there.
Yeah.
But yet,
mm-hmm.
they almost went to jail because they failed to notify the authorities
yeah.
when what they were trying to do was protect, which is what used to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be we used to protect the identity of mm-hmm. these people. This girl now, you know, everybody know, you know, it'll always be yeah. a stain on
yeah.
her.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, here's what's funny about that. And this is kind of, I think, what you're getting at mm-hmm. too. It used to be a stain on her.
Yeah.
Today it's not a, it may almost yeah. it's a badge.
Yeah, that's
it's a almost a badge, which I think is the problem, and I think that's part of what you're getting to.
Yeah, that really is a big part of it, and you know, and I think there's competing interests, and it's going to be tough. I do want to say something. You said something that many years ago on the radio. It was about 5 years ago. Donald Trump was trying to clarify his position on abortion and stuff, and he said initially that if a woman hires an abortionist to kill her baby, she should be treated as a criminal. And as soon as his handlers got a hold of him, oh, no, no, we cannot hold the woman responsible. And you said on the radio, and I was like, go, Eddie, you said, hey, if a woman hires a hitman to take out her husband, you bet she goes to prison for it. I think you said that. Maybe that's just what I was thinking.
I think that's what you're thinking.
But is that not your position?
Are you worried? Do you sleep with one eye open? Yeah. No. Yeah. No, actually, what I said was that if that same woman
yeah.
Who before the baby is born is forced to go get an abortion by the father, the mm-hmm. husband, whoever it is,
yeah.
she's a victim.
Yeah.
The poor abused woman.
Yeah.
If it's the day or two after she has the baby and she goes and kills the baby,
yeah.
she's an accomplice.
Right.
So basically we got a 2-day difference here on what makes her an accomplice to murder, or if not
yeah.
an accomplice to murder, because she's the yeah. one who brings the baby to be killed.
Right.
And 2 days earlier,
yeah.
she's the victim.
Right.
How and my main point was, if you truly want to end abortion, the only way you can mm-hmm. end abortion is if you begin prosecuting the women.
Sure.
And of course, all of the, you know, pro-life people just thought, oh, that's unfair, that's unjust, and poor women. But you're never going to do it if there's no consequence for the woman. Yeah. You're going to have yeah. others, just like the girls I was mm-hmm. talking about. One of those two young yeah. ladies did end up not having one, but had multiple children out yeah. of the 15 and 13 year old mm-hmm. girls I was talking about.
Yeah.
One of them had two children out of wedlock mm-hmm. just a few years later.
Yeah.
So, you know, my case was made.
Yep.
I mean, I hate the fact that,
yeah.
that I was prophetic in my thinking, but you see what I'm
yeah.
saying? There is a message in the things we do, particularly
right.
in church.
We don't succeed in overturning abortion when we become intellectually inconsistent. It's just like the day I remember Jerry Falwell announced that he would agree to legislation that still allows it for rape and incest. And I said, Jerry, you just sold your soul. You know, it's just like when Satan came to Jesus and said, I'll give you everything if you'll just bow down and worship me. Well, he would have nothing if he was a slave to Satan, right? So you lose your intellectual integrity and you weaken yourself. You have no moral fortitude for your position when you're inconsistent in it. And I believe Donald Trump succumbed to that same inconsistency, just like every other politician with an R after their name, nearly all of them. And so that's my position on that.
No, and I'm glad you brought this up. We've gone a lot longer than yeah. I think we planned to on this. But anyway, let's go ahead and take a little bit of a break here
yeah.
and let people get up and go get a beer or something or a shot if they need it on that discussion. This is Eddie Huff
CBD.
With David Van Rissingham, and we'll be back. We'll be right back. Oh, yeah. I just had to play that again last week. For those of you that didn't listen to last week's show, that is Idle Cure. We had a whole session with Mark Ambrose of Idle Cure last week, and it was a great time. Good, dear friends. That song is a very special song by Idle Cure from the late 80s, but some songs just never grow out of style. And if you really listen to the lyrics, that was inspired by what they saw on the streets of Amsterdam and in Europe. A lot of despair. All we see is the beauty of Europe, but there are a lot of things that aren't so nice out there, as there are in the United States of America. Hey, David, we're really running long today, but it's been good. I mean, this was a really, really, really good discussion, and I hope it engenders some thought on behalf of the people listening out there and challenges your view on many things and what we have to do. And it also explains a lot of why we're in the mess that we seem to be in on so many fronts. Yeah. Do you know who John Warwick Montgomery is?
I've heard the name.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Hold on, David. I had you muted. I'm sorry.
Ah,
there you.
That works
back.
Great in a debate.
Yeah,
you've got the board.
I should have thought about it a little. No, but John Warwick Montgomery is an apologist. He's written several books. He was a professor at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School, and then when I went to Meadowland School of Theology, he was my apologetics professor and systematic theology. Brilliant, brilliant man. I think he has like 10 degrees, including JD, Doctor of Jurisprudence, a lawyer.
Wow.
But he's a real heavy thinker. His books are really good. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he used to really, in fact, he did a debate in the 60s on situation ethics. Mm. Some people go situational ethics, but situation ethics. And there was a book out in the 60s called Situation Ethics, in which it was a Presbyterian theologian, Fletcher. I can't remember his first name right now. Art Fletcher. It's something Fletcher. In any event, he felt that the situation dictates your ethics.
Yeah.
And it was the genesis of the whole situation ethics movement.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons. And the reason I say that is because one of the reasons we're in some of the places we are now is because we say, well, you can't have hard and fast laws and rules.
Moral absolutes.
Moral absolutes. You can't have them, you know, the situation. And the big question Fletcher asks in the debate and in the book, he says, imagine you're a farmer and you're in the 1800s and Indians are attacking and you have a daughter and you've hidden her away and they capture you and they tell you, you know, where's your daughter? Mm-hmm. If you don't give us your daughter, you'll die or whatever. Or you're being tortured. What do you do? Well, I don't tell them where my daughter is. For what? I mean, that's a stupid one because, you know, as soon as they're going to kill me anyway.
Yeah.
So, and then they're going to kill her, find her and kill her. I mean, you know, in my debate, I don't have to make it so intellectual.
Yeah.
I said, well, you idiot. No, I don't tell them where to kill me. And, you know, at least she lives.
Yeah.
But of course, no, that wasn't the right answer. And according to him, you're supposed to give up your daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. So, but that's kind of what a lot of we've been discussing deals with, and the reason America is where it is today, because we've fallen into this area of situation ethics. Yeah. It's funny, too, that little, it's a little booklet. It's just like a, I don't know, it's maybe 80, 90 pages of this debate that these guys had, John Warwick Montgomery and I can't remember. I'm sure it was Fletcher, but I can't remember.
No, it wasn't John Wesley Fletcher, the preacher, was it?
It might be John Fletcher. It was Fletcher, but he was Presbyterian. But I think he was more of a theologian.
Yeah.
But he was the author of the whole thinking of situation ethics. And I looked it up on Amazon. The book, the little booklet is like $120. I mean, I thought, whoa, I'm going to hold on to this. It might end up like Patrick Mahomes' rookie card, $4 million. You know, I don't know if you saw that. You heard that this week. Patrick Mahomes' rookie card is $4 million. I wanted to get one and I didn't. I should have invested. Could have invested in Amazon back when it was $5 and Netflix. Yeah. But I digress, which I do so often. Anyway, moving on. There's that word again. Anyway, hey, let's look at a couple more things. I want to deal with, I've been thinking a whole lot of this whole coronavirus deal.
Yeah.
And it's ridiculous. I mean, it's ridiculous, okay? I'm tired. People, you need to stand up, wake up, whatever you got to do, fight back. I mean, this is just insane what they're doing to every aspect. I don't know if you've been watching the Olympics this week. Mm-hmm. The ratings are way down. A lot of people aren't watching. No. My wife and I, we do like swimming, so we've been watching the swimming, some of the gymnastics. Mm-hmm. I'm waiting for the track and field. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of really strong Christians. It's funny how track and field seems to attract the Christians. I mean, it's weird. So many of the track and field people are Christian. But while I was thinking about this, because, you know, the silly thing of they wear these masks, they're in the pool, they're in the gym, they're hugging, they're around each other all the time, and then they get up on a podium where they're socially distanced anyway, and they wear these stupid mask that looked like a dog muzzle.
Yeah.
I don't know if that occurred to you, these white things. It looks like the muzzle on a Doberman pincher.
Yeah.
You know, this thing sticking way out there. With
the big cone, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, what is the deal? And I'm really happy that several of the male swimmers, they haven't been wearing the track people. They're smart. I can't breathe. I mean, I just swam up 10 miles, and you want me to sit here with this mask?
It's insane.
Just dying.
It's harmful to their body.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But the thought hit me, how we faced everything in the past. I was going to say, I don't know if you know or remember, but knowing you, you definitely, everything I remember, like you remember, it was like we were conjoined twins at one time or something in many ways. But the whole Franklin Delano Roosevelt, do you remember his great statement?
We have nothing to fear but fear itself.
There it is.
Yeah.
I didn't even have to read it. Okay. And you knew it. See, yes, that's it. And that's what's happened.
Yeah.
The difference in the prior generations that have faced pestilence, war, famine, everything. Mm-hmm. They were not afraid.
Right.
And we have allowed fear to control us.
Mm-hmm.
What does the Bible say?
Mm-hmm.
We do not have a spirit of what?
Of fear, but of love and power and a sound mind.
Exactly.
Perfect love casts out fear.
Exactly. Yes. And right now, the powers that be, which are led by the prince of this world, have instilled fear.
Yeah.
Into the mass population. And the sad thing is it's infiltrated the church.
It has.
The Church of Jesus Christ. We have people in our churches that are just chickens. I mean, just fearful of everything. And they want to do anything the government says, whether they're afraid of getting sick or they're afraid of being judged by the secular world.
Yeah.
And that is the real key behind right now.
Mm-hmm.
The whole vaccine thing.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I want to borrow something from your situational ethics, because you threw us a curveball when you said, if I tell them, they'll still kill me anyway, right? So here's the narrative. People are thinking, if I just comply, then the problem will go away. No, the more you comply, the more they bully.
Exactly.
That's how bullies work.
Wow. That's good. That's good.
And you threw us for a curve. Yeah, you're right. If I comply, they will be even more overbearing, you know, less respectful of me. And so this is my problem. Now, where it applies to the church, you and I have several friends that have been part of the Tulsa 912 Project, right? Kind of a Tea Party group. They were still meeting even during the pandemic, you know, pseudo lockdowns. What did the health department do? They couldn't get anywhere with Rhonda or, you know, Lori or any of them. They called the church where they were meeting at and that got the church to buckle. That's the problem.
And what did they do? They changed churches.
Yes, they changed auditoriums, meeting places. Yeah. Right.
And you know why they have messed with them at the new church, don't you?
I kind of know that, Pastor.
Because Black Lives Matter. That's
right. It's a black
church. We're not gonna mess with the black church.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so silly. The whole thing. Speaking of chickens, and I'm just gonna call him out. Our mayor, our city council, is the biggest bunch of chickens.
Absolutely.
yeah. I have ever run into. Well, they are it's ridiculous.
Well, he's a passive aggressive. He's not a strong leader. He always has to find somebody else. Well, I promised Dr. Dart, the pseudo claims to be a doctor. We think that means physician. He doesn't even have a medical degree.
No, he doesn't have.
Okay, but and now I got to give credit to Clay Clark when 912 left the church where they were meeting. It was Clay Clark said, come meet here. There's no way I'm letting the health department shut us down. So I got to give him some rap, you know,
perhaps. Of course, Clay's place is not in Tulsa.
Right. It's in Jinx.
It's in Jinx.
But it's still Tulsa County.
Well, it's Tulsa County. Yeah, but yeah. He has no say. Our mayor doesn't have any say in Tulsa
But this
County.
Was the county health department that was.
I thought it was the city health department.
No, it's a county. It's a county operation.
Okay. Well, then why can you. Do you not have mask mandates in BA, Bixby, Owosso? Those
it's
are still counting.
It's the governor. I mean, it's the mayor who's trying to put powers behind the recommendation. Yeah, the county health department cannot force it.
Right. They're
create, pressuring.
Right, they're pressuring.
Yeah.
Okay.
And to many churches, many sheep, you know, and I'm not using that in a good context, just are buckling under.
By the way, I threw that in because we were agreeing too much. I just had to find some, I had to find something to give you a hard time.
There you go.
Anyway, back to the original thing.
Yeah.
We're same mind people. We both think that this is all about fear and control. People, afraid people are easily controlled.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of that crazy commercial. I don't remember. It's Geico or Progressive, where the kids are running. They came out of a house or something, and they're terrified. And what do we do? And the girl says, you know, why don't we just go get in that running car and take off? Are you crazy? And they run behind chainsaws. And there's a guy with the mask behind him. Even he's saying, this is ridiculous. These people are so stupid. You know, because that's what I think of sometimes when I look at these people and their fear of COVID.
Yeah.
And now the big thing, the Delta variant. What do you call it? The Delta variants. And people, it's still Corona. It's still the flu.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, the flu is a coronavirus, the a cold, a bad, a serious cold.
Well, influenza.
It's a viral.
Yeah.
It's a viral.
There is a difference between an influenza and the common cold. They are separate types of viruses.
Right. But they're all varieties, like a corona 1, 2, or, you got the numbers.
Right. But these are actually cold viruses, not influenza viruses. It doesn't mean it's not dangerous.
Well, but the difference in the cold, though, cold is bacterial, where the virus is viral.
No, I'm going to differentiate.
Okay. This is your homework this week, people. Go check it out. Is the cold a virus or is it bacterial?
Yeah.
The reason I say I know this is because in Europe, if you had a cold, they would not give you antibiotics. If you had a virus, they would not give you antibiotics.
Right.
If you had a cold, the
And here's the problem. People develop a secondary bacterial infection many times in the potential.
From a virus.
Right.
Right.
And potential for pneumonia, the longer you go, it gets greater.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Because, yes, bacterial infections can set in. And so, go ahead, Eddie.
Yeah, this is the fun part when we argue a little bit. Yeah. Hey, anyway, back to the main thought. It's fear. It's all about fear. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, I've asked before, what's the deal with masks and vax?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Supposedly, if you get a vaccine, every other vaccine you've ever had, okay, you're good. You know, measles, mumps, rubella, flu, chickenpox, all these deals. You know, and do you remember, I don't know if when you were a kid they did this, but or when you with your children, but I remember we had our kids had the measles. Chicken pox.
Oh, yeah, we had chicken pox parties.
And then the other parents would bring their kids over to get infected, chicken pox out of the way.
That was such child abuse, wasn't it?
Well, they're happy now because they don't want to get it as an adult, which is much worse.
The shingles,
So the problem is here that people are so afraid that a lot of people won't leave their house. They take all of these extra precautions. Mm-hmm. You know, honestly, the best defense, people, is a good offense. And that offense is taking vitamins.
Mm-hmm.
There's certain vitamins.
Yeah, and supplements.
That,
yeah.
And supplements that mm-hmm. you can get, mm-hmm. particularly to fight this.
Yes.
The medical establishment doesn't want us to know this because we won't need their vaccine.
Yes, nor right. the pharmaceuticals.
Right, yeah. right. And so this is, and who do the medical people get paid by?
Yeah.
The pharmaceuticals and absolutely. Vice versa. It's such a slimy thing. It's everything
yeah.
is about money. In fact, like I have, the love of money is the root of all evil.
Mm-hmm.
And it's corrupted every yeah. facet of our society. And the medical profession today
yeah.
is just super corrupt.
Yeah.
A lot of the people, did you know that the hospitals are getting paid more for corona cases than they are
yep.
normal cases?
Yeah, they are.
And so that's why you have all
that's
these people
paid more by the government.
Right, right. Yeah. And so that's why they're being so quick to diagnose corona.
Yeah. Right.
And right now, you know, the big thing, hospitals are filling up again.
Yeah.
Our ERs are filling up again. Yeah, it's because you got people afraid. You could take care of this at home.
Yeah.
And just ignore it. But first pinch, oh, I must have corona. Yeah. I have the Delta variant. So I'm going to run yeah. to the ER and, oh, put me in the hospital because I can't breathe right. Even though some of the problem breathing is your anxiety
yeah.
or stuff.
Yeah. yeah.
So we've got to use some rational thinking. I read the book years ago. It's called Influenza. Super thin. It's like 800 pages or
wow.
something, and it's about the Spanish flu.
Oh yeah,
and it tells
yeah.
the whole story how it yeah. started up in Manhattan, Kansas, at Fort mm-hmm. Riley, Kansas.
Yeah.
One day, and at first they were pushing the line that it was some German biological weapon, but it
yeah.
actually went the other way.
I think it was from a pig farm.
In Manhattan.
Yeah.
Well, okay. It could be. I don't know. Yeah. They said they were
but
they were burning something up there, and then
right.
then all of a sudden these guys got sick, and then they shipped
yes.
them out to these ports to go fight
yeah.
the war in
yeah,
Europe.
It was a military base that got
and
the first break.
Every place yeah. that these troops were being sent from,
mm-hmm.
where the ships were embarking, every place all of a sudden had an epidemic.
Yeah. It was an American flu, but we called it the Spanish flu.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the reason was, just like this virus, to an extent, Spain got hit the hardest.
Oh.
And also, it almost wiped out the Eskimos. I don't know if you knew that. It's something else. In fact, there's a really good little Disney movie out called Togo. Togo. It's about this dog. Mm. And what happened, they couldn't get the medicine for the kids
yeah.
there in this town in Alaska, and so they sent and nobody could fly in, so they sent these sled dogs out.
Okay, so you're saying the Spanish flu of 100 years ago almost wiped out the Eskimos.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's how bad. I mean, that
yeah.
was a pandemic right
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
And this one dog ran like 100 miles or something.
Wow.
I mean, it was an amazing story, but
wow.
that dog didn't get credit for it because it stopped in the last 10 miles was run by another dog, and the reporter yeah, yeah. It's kind of like
politician
Biden, like Biden taking credit for the
yeah.
vaccine,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Trump gets this
yeah.
accelerated vaccine, and all of a sudden, you know, he's out and Biden steps in with that mm-hmm. same vaccine. Oh, yeah, we vaccinated so many. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, but yeah, if vaccines are supposed to help, why do I need to wear a mask? If masks work, why do I need the vaccine? Why do I have both? And now we're talking about a third dose. You know, the third one will take care of the Delta variant.
Yeah.
But then here comes the Echo variant or the Omega variant. By the time we get done, you're going to be taking 25 shots.
Yeah. And I want to say something here. First of all, no vaccine is 100%. None. In fact, I read the articles, the people who developed the chickenpox vaccine told the government, and this is 20 some years ago, they said, if everybody got all three shots, because the chickenpox vaccine is three shots, if everybody did, we would cut chickenpox in half. That's it. It's still called a vaccine, but now here's the point. It makes it, if you do get it, it's not nearly
as bad.
As strong. And that's true of many of these vaccines.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And it's definitely true. We're finding out, you got enough data to say, the coronavirus, if you've been vaccinated, you might still get it.
Right.
But they are proving it. You're not likely at all
to
even be hospitalized.
Right,
I mean, it drops the hospitalizations way down. So we know that there is effectiveness in the short range that we're seeing. We don't know the long range. It's
But I just saw the figures come out yesterday that 60% of the hospitalized are people that had the shot.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's I don't know. Again, like I said, I think a lot of it is psychological. It goes back to the fear factor. You know, I got my shot, but now I've got a cold. And where normally you would have a cold and you would take your NyQuil or whatever and ride it through, trust God or whatever.
Right.
Now, I'm going to run to the doctor, to the ER, right immediately.
I'll say this. I got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Mm-hmm. It's a one-shot
deal.
It's
the true vaccine.
Yes, the traditional vaccine science, not this new mRNA technology. But it was about a month ago. And I started the last couple of weeks, I've just been feeling a little more tired, a little more sore. And I stopped to think about it. I just put my body through stress. Now, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is longer in building up antibodies than the mRNA. So I'm kind of in that peak of where my body's really kicking out the antibodies. That means it's saying, hey, you're under attack, even though I'm not, or at least I'm not by a serious threat. I'm not getting any of the symptoms, but I can tell my body's a little bit more worn down.
Could it just be that you're getting old?
Oh, don't talk that way.
Maybe you need to go to the Low T Center.
Yeah, there we go.
On South Memorial in Tulsa, Oklahoma, number 918. Hey,
I was telling a friend of mine in his 70s, I just turned 60 this month. 60? Oh, man, I could still pee when I was 60. I'm sorry, Eddie. Is that a little too close?
TMI.
Okay, but, you know, my thing on this is you are being stressed just by going through the vaccine therapy.
Sure.
You are. Right. So here's my point. We are now at a place where anybody who wants a vaccine has a reasonably simple opportunity to get the vaccine. We also know that if you're vaccinated, it's a minor cold, a minor sickness. You're probably going to feel bad at worse for a few days, but you're not going to be impacted like you would have a year and a half ago. All right, not even close. So since it's no longer a life-threatening condition, if you're vaccinated, then why are there any mandates? Those who want to take the risk, fine, it's their risk. Those who are vaccinated, they're not at risk. So leave me alone, live your life, I'll live mine.
Yeah, I mean, the whole reason to get vaccinated is so that you don't catch it or you don't give it.
Yeah.
So why is it that everybody is supposed to get vaccinated, but we still are doing social distancing? We're still making people, especially little kids, wear masks, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, it doesn't make sense. I'd like someone to investigate who's making the money on the masks.
Yeah.
Is it China? Is it J&J or whoever, I don't know, 3M or somebody is making. I mean, if you had invested in mask makers back, you know, a year ago or a year and a half ago, you'd be in the money. Let's move on real quick. Yeah. Again, like I said, it's mainly the love of money. I want to briefly hit this January 6th commission. Yeah. Total farce.
Oh, God, yeah.
And crying Kitzinger. I mean, you've seen Adam. The guy, he's just, you know, it's ridiculous.
It was over the top.
And the four cops. I mean, the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen.
Bad
and
actors.
The guy with all the neck tattoos.
Yeah.
And you heard, he came on like a week before. Kind of coincidence that he shows up a week before. And they had a picture of him. And if you looked at his uniform, it wasn't a normal uniform. He almost looked like Antifa.
An informant, yes.
Right.
In fact,
but now he's in this cop uniform and he's this heralded person and they're talking about being all these people being attacked.
No, this looks like an FBI setup.
Yeah. Yeah. And Tucker has been the one. By the way, if you're not listening to Tucker Carlson, that's about the only thing on Fox I still watch. But
right.
Tucker, he's not unashamed. I mean,
well, Revolver.com broke it, and then Tucker interviewed the editor of Revolver.com.
Yeah, yeah, right. And so, but I'm saying, you know, the thing about Tucker is he takes the news that you might find here and here and here, but he'll bring it out. I mean, it's incredible stuff that he's been finding out. Just like the Michigan, the kidnapping of the governor was a setup by the FBI.
Right.
I mean, how far do you have to go? I mean, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, this is scary stuff that they're able to do that.
Here's the thing. If you or I incite others to violence, we go to prison. If the FBI incites them to violence, they get a promotion.
Right. Yeah. And everybody that they incited goes to prison.
Yes.
Yeah. It is some scary stuff. Yeah. So anyway, just anything you hear about the 9/11, the January 6th commission, it's a farce. It's a joke. Oh, God, just throw it out. Throw it out. Just, it's a joke.
I'm actually glad they had it just because it showed how bad it was.
Those people ought to be embarrassed. Whoever encouraged Kissinger and Kinzinger and Liz Cheney to do this.
No, when
they probably regret it. They should regret it.
When they're making fools of themselves, get out of their way and let them do their thing.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, I'm going to finish. We're going to finish here this week's episode, which we've actually gone longer than normal.
Well,
but it's been good. There's a lot of good stuff.
We've been saving this up for 3 weeks, Andy. At least I have.
Yeah. Well, this is going to be controversial.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And since you're white and I'm not, I can say this.
Mm-hmm.
And you, all you have to do is sit there and listen with your white privilege.
Yes.
As I expose my race traitor roots or whatever, you know, it's funny. The funniest thing when I get somebody, I'm not on Twitter anymore, but I remember before when I'm winning with a liberal, then they turn around and call me a race traitor.
Mm-hmm.
A white person calling me a race traitor when they have no clue about what it means,
mm-hmm.
you know, to be black or anything else other than privileged.
Yeah.
Anyway, here's the statement. I would just make the statement in a week. I'm going to leave it out there for a second. The main factor, slavery,
mm-hmm.
as bad as it is perceived,
mm-hmm.
was the prime factor in the uplift of Africans and their descendants.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if Africans had been left in Africa and not brought into Europe
mm-hmm.
Or America and never had contact with Europeans. Imagine for all races. Imagine the Olympic team.
Yeah.
So what I'm getting at by this is this. Africa, regardless of William Lewis Gates or Lewis Gates, the black historian from Harvard, I always get sidetracked. Is it Harvard or Yale? You know, it's one of those Ivy League schools, Harvard or Yale. Gates and a lot of black people claim that black civilization was advanced and it's so smart and this and this and this. I'm sorry, I'm not buying it. And you can't.
Well, Farrakhan says so.
You can't lump sub-Saharan Africans with the Egyptians. They try to make that stretch.
Right.
That black people are inherently superior because look at the Egyptians. Well, Egyptians aren't black. Just ask an Egyptian.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
In fact, Egyptians used African slaves, sub-Saharan African slaves, you know. But, and man, we could get into another whole hour. But let me just say this, and I'm gonna give you my points of view on this. The reason that Africans were not as advanced as Europeans is because they did not have the struggle Europeans had.
Mm.
When you lived north, the further north, say Scandinavia, Germany, Holland, all of the, where in Russia, Siberia, you had to deal with cold.
Yeah.
Right? You had to figure out, okay, what are we going to do to stay warm and live?
Yeah.
What are we going to do to make it easier to grow crops,
And there's only certain times a year you grow crops.
And so what do we do to prepare? And, yeah. You know, there's so many things you have storage to think about. And all of that. You know, when you're in Africa, I've been to Uganda, Kenya, mm-hmm. Rwanda, Burundi. Mm-hmm. I've been all over East Africa, okay, yeah. South Africa.
Yeah.
You know, you throw a seed out, and it's a tree 2 days later. You know,
I mean, yeah,
that's an exaggeration, but it's right. very simple. Mm-hmm. Every African, mm-hmm. particularly in the Fertile Crescent, as they call it, in Uganda, Rwanda, mm-hmm. Congo, all that Central yeah. Africa, and even parts of East and West Africa, it's just naturally set up as a garden.
Yeah,
naturally.
Oh God.
And so. You didn't have to struggle. Mm-hmm. You didn't have to struggle, right? Yeah. Your animals could have all the food they needed. Yeah. You didn't have to worry about feeding your animals. Your animals would just eat what's out there, right? Yeah. And so, but in Europe, they had to struggle
yeah.
to survive. Mm-hmm. Now, some people, eugenicists, have made the mistake of thinking that because Europeans developed certain things and advanced mm-hmm. in certain areas, technology and all.
Yeah.
They're smarter than black people. Black people are, you know, Africans and mm-hmm. Hispanics and other races mm-hmm. are inferior to the Caucasian. Mm. They think it's a natural, a born thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm convinced it's environment because
I agree.
So many of the things, once the Africans were brought here, later generations, you look at all of the things that black Americans have developed,
absolutely.
You know, George Washington Carver and all
yeah.
of the, and that was, he developed all that at Tuskegee Institute, an all black school. He didn't
yeah.
have the benefit
exactly.
of MIT, Harvard
exactly.
or Yale. Right.
Yep.
Dr. Charles Drew, I don't know if you know who
no,
he is.
No, doesn't ring a bell.
He's the one who developed blood plasma.
Oh, okay.
We didn't have blood plasma.
Okay.
He saved millions, if not billions of lives
yeah.
through his breakthrough. Yet,
right.
do you know how he died?
Mm-mm.
He bled to death because he couldn't get the plasma because they wouldn't let him into a white
oh,
hospital that
God.
Had, I know, can you? I mean, these are horrible stories. I mean,
yeah.
there's some horrible stories associated with all of this.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, Charles Drew invented blood plasma.
That's interesting.
George Washington Carver,
oh,
peanut,
what did
soybeans,
yeah,
sweet potato,
yeah.
all of the things he came up with.
Brilliant,
right?
man.
You look at, you saw Hidden Figures, the movie Hidden Figures.
Doesn't ring a bell.
Okay. It's about these black ladies that worked for NASA on the space program. Oh, you've got to see it.
Yeah.
You've got to see it. Well, one of the ladies was able to, with a slide rule in just her mind, figure out what they had to do to get Apollo 13 back.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And they were involved, and she just died last year, by the
really?
Way, at 104.
Wow.
104 years old. Mm-hmm. Brilliant. At seventh grade, she was in high school. She went to university, I think,
wow.
at 13 or something. She's one of these incredible
yeah.
minds.
Sure.
She was black.
Yeah.
A descendant of slaves.
Sure.
Okay. So get that out of your mind that any race is superior
oh, yeah.
mentally or intellectual. But what I'm saying is that environment had something to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, had Europeans never brought slaves to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Had that never happened, we would still be in sub-Saharan Africa,
mm-hmm.
and we wouldn't be able to have many of the things we have. All the things
yeah.
that black people have accomplished, particularly in this nation. Now,
yeah.
this is where you can come in.
Oh, yeah.
What is it that has made the United States particularly fertile for the black mind?
Fertile for the black mind.
Yeah, in other words, why is it that all of these black scientists, engineers, inventors, you name it, all of these descendants of Africans in America have done it, and they didn't do it in other countries? Outside of the U.S., even Europe.
I could go. I'm speechless, Eddie. You give me
okay.
your answer because
okay.
I'm thinking of eight of them.
Freedom.
Yes. Yes.
It's the freedom to compete in the United States of America.
Absolutely.
Which you don't have. See, I spent 12 years in Holland and Germany.
Yeah.
When I was in Germany in the fourth grade, I went to see my daughter's teacher. And we'll end on this because we're way over. I went to visit my daughter's teacher to see how, you know, it was
mm-hmm.
teacher visitation. And so I said, oh, hey, I just came, wanted to meet you. How is she doing? Oh, she's doing great. She's wonderful. I said, oh, good. Because she has to be prepared when we go back to America one day to go to university and teach. Oh, well, wait a minute. She's not doing that great. So what do you mean, not that great? I mean, you just said a minute ago, she's doing great. You have levels of great here?
Yeah.
You know, she says, well, I don't think your daughter is university material. I said, whoa. Stop the bus. Yeah. You know, wait. I said, wait a minute. I didn't think that was your job to determine who's the material and who's not material.
Thank you.
Your job is to teach them.
Yeah.
And honestly, it was like I had slapped her out of a
stupor. And where was this at?
In Germany.
Germany.
Smacked the lady upside the face with the reality.
Now, was this a Dodd school? Department
no, this
of
was German. This was a German school. Okay. Dodd schools are different. Dodd's are actually good schools.
Yes.
Everybody I graduated with has done well. But anyway, so all of a sudden it was like no one had ever confronted her. Now, it wasn't just because her father was black. Okay.
Yeah.
It had nothing with American. What it was is, they have a pecking order.
Yeah.
So Dr. Schmidt next door, okay, his kids, the teachers know that Dr. Schmidt expects you to get his kid through to this.
Well, that's corruption.
This butcher's daughter, you know, or baker's daughter or farmer's son.
Sure.
You don't have to work as hard because they're going to achieve at the level of their father. In other words, their father never did anything, so they won't either.
That's the class system of Europe.
They have their schools set up in three categories.
Yeah.
You have the gymnasium, which is the university level.
Yeah.
You have the Realschule, which ends up being your professional class, non-university. Mm-hmm. And then you have the Volksschule, which is they only go to school for 8 years. And then they go once a day for ninth grade, but they go to work in apprenticeships, working in factories and butcher and baker
shops. Nothing wrong with that. You know, I mean, there's honor in all work.
There's nothing wrong inherently. In fact, we could use technical schools are fine.
Yeah.
The problem is when you peg a kid at 8 and 9 years old, which one
that's
is going to succeed at each level?
Right.
To bring the story home, I'm sorry, let me just finish my thought. In doing that, by the end of that school year, that teacher did everything she could to make my daughter make it into the gymnasium.
Thank you.
Because I had called her on her own mental bias of thinking that because I'm not a doctor, a lawyer, an Indian chief, my daughter can't be a doctor, a lawyer. My daughter ended up going on a full ride to Pepperdine University.
There you go.
Where she graduated summa cum laude from university.
Oh,
and this is the girl that wasn't even supposed to be material to go to college.
Success is the best revenge.
It is. But seriously, that teacher, she had my daughter babysitting with her. When she went place, she took my daughter. It was like she adopted my daughter all of a sudden.
She began to see the potential in your daughter.
Right. And the real problem, the real problem with all of this, the ones that don't succeed, the kids that don't succeed, is the parents. It's not
the parent that
won't confront a teacher, a parent that will confront the teacher in the wrong way.
Or doesn't even show up for parent conferences.
Hello. So anyway, but getting back to the original point.
Yeah.
I look at Olympic champions. Okay. Black Olympic champions. How many of them from non-United States countries do you see? Even in sports. I mean, even in sports, who has succeeded above everyone else?
Bolt. The runner.
I know. But I'm talking about across the board, generally.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, see? And so, okay, Jamaica has a Usain Bolt.
Yes.
Okay. Usain's getting a little older now, long in the tooth.
Yeah.
Great guy. I love the guy, by the way. He's a very legitimate.
Fun guy to watch.
Wonderful. In fact, the video, I'll throw this out there. If you've ever seen the video, it's on YouTube, where NBC or CBS, somebody's interviewing, and the Star Spangled Banner starts. The United States anthem starts. And this reporter, he said, hold it, stop. And he turns around, and he puts his hand on his heart. for the United States Star Spangled Banner that Colin Kaepernick won't stand for. Usain Bolt. So that won him over for me forever.
Yep.
But he's a one out. But you look at Europe, France, how many French parents, I mean presidents of African descent have you seen?
Yeah.
How many vice presidents? How many in their upper government? Right. England.
Yeah.
Germany.
You're right. It's freedom.
It'd be zero.
Yeah. Freedom, it makes a difference. I love what George Bush said. The soft bigotry of low expectations.
Exactly.
Because that's exactly what your daughter was facing with a teacher who didn't believe in her and therefore didn't hold her to a high standard.
Right.
That's the thing. Being tough on somebody is part of training them. Now, I'm not saying that every slave master was trying to train their people to be better people, but I agree with you. I agree with G. Gordon Liddy said 30 years ago, if I could wave a wand and have any president I want, I'd want Thomas Sowell. You know, brilliant mind, brilliant professor at Stanford, black man.
Yeah.
You know, Now I'm going to say that class system of Europe, I'm an American because of that. My great-grandfather was told, you're going to be a butcher. That's our family business. He said, I want to be a farmer. There was no farmland. Nobody's going to sell you farmland. You can't. And he heard in America they're giving away farmland.
Yeah.
So he came to America, and by God, it was rough. But now there are more Van Rissighems in America than there are in Europe.
Wow. Yeah. Hey, listen, we better stop.
Yeah.
We could go on. We've saved this up for weeks.
We got half the show list.
Good to get out. If you get a chance, listen to last week's show. If you didn't get a chance with Idle Cure.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some additional stuff in there that's really, really good. By the way, check out the new website.
Yes.
Freshblack.coffee.
That's right.
Freshblack.coffee, which is, by the way, congratulate. Thank you for setting that up. That's really cool.
Yeah.
And, of course, invite your friends to listen to this. Send them this podcast. Whether they like it or not, they may hate me, but they may want to get in touch just because they hate me. And David and I do nothing, like nothing more than to argue with people. So that would be a blessing. Anyway, hey, we're going to get out of here.
Right.
Thank you guys again for everything. And we look forward to talking to you next week. God bless. Have a great week. Be careful out there.